This is the regular meeting of the Board of Education, January 23rd, 2007.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the January 23rd. What's this, January 9th? Anyway, January 23rd meeting of the Board of Education of West Covina Unified School District. If you will join me in the invocation and flag salute, please.
Dear Lord, we want to take this opportunity to thank you for having the opportunity to teach the students in this district. And thank you for the teachers that work with the students every day. Please guide us as we make the decisions that affect the students' and teachers' lives this evening. In his name we pray, amen.
Please join me in the salute to our flag. Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Cox?
Here.
Mr.
Finn? Here.
Ms. Shoemaker?
Here.
Mr. Fuller?
Here.
Mrs. Fuller?
Here.
Mr.
Here.
Mrs.
Here.
Before we begin this evening's presentation, I would like to take this opportunity to introduce a very special and honored guest of ours this evening who's attending the board meeting, something that he's had a long history of doing and for many, many, many years. Would you join me in welcoming again Mr. Pete Sabatino, former board member of West Covina University. Thank you for being here. Thank you, Pete. He's back there. He's the guy with the long hair.
He's the ponytail.
The guy with the mustache.
And the ponytail.
Gained a few weight pounds, you know. All right, I understand we have a presentation from Orangewood School.
Welcome, Orangewood. Thank you for coming.
Woo-hoo!
Good evening, everybody. This is Jennifer Rosenfeld, first grade teacher, and she's going to help turn the page. Okay, so welcome to Orangewood. We'll start with our API growth since 1999. We're extremely proud of our 36 API growth last year. While we're thrilled with our growth, as you can see, we still have huge challenges against us. We have two major subgroups that are substantially lower than our total of 752, both economically disadvantaged and Hispanic, and we're working very hard to close those gaps. One of the first things we did this year before school started was we had our teacher in-service days. We had one day on understanding poverty to help us sort of bring up to speed on that and give us strategies on how to close that gap. Okay. At Orangewood, we have a clear and shared focus. We have completely aligned what we're doing this year with our district goals. Our goal is 800, and we're really working hard towards that. We've shared that with everyone, all of our stakeholders, parents, teachers. Everyone's working hard to improve student achievement. Our SFA is back on track. We're working very hard. We have a lot of exciting things happening with that. Another thing we're working on this year is our attendance, and we're trying to improve that. That's our goal of 97%. We're not quite there, but we're working on it. We are working very diligently with our English learners, and really trying to close those gaps. We've established a positive discipline program, which I'll chat a little bit more about. We use data constantly and very focused professional development this year. We've covered a lot of topics. Okay, our attendance, our goal is 97%. As you can see, last year we didn't quite make 96%. We have improved every month that we have data available since this year. From last year, however, we have not met our goal yet. We have a really fun program in place. It's an attendance calendar, and on every 20th day, We have a free dress day and an ice cream party. And that is a big incentive, ice cream. And so we haven't quite made one yet. We have a third grade class that's almost there, and they called me a day ago, and they said, maybe yesterday, maybe the day before, and they said, the teacher got on the phone and she said, hold on, and the teacher said, all the kids in the room said, five more days. So we're getting close to making, so we're really trying to improve that. Go back, Monica. Okay. High standards and expectations for all students. We're working hard to relay our standards. I just had a principal coffee about 2 weeks ago. We're sharing Astrid, our literacy coach. We're having lots of parent training. Our PTA is just really making leaps and bounds. We have a lot of people very committed and very excited about where we're going to school. So we're sharing all of that. We look at multiple measures, including some new assessments we have going in SFA. And our parent conferences were a little different this year in that we really focused on standards and trying to train parents. Okay. We have implemented pacing guides this year. So we are working very hard to make sure our assessment is tied to the standards, our assessment, our curriculum, everything. So, and that we get everything in before our testing starts in May. So that's something we have done this year. Our grade level meetings, we are doing a lot of things. When we look at data, we have standards binders, so we have it available every time we come to a meeting. As we look at benchmarks, we include the blueprints, release test questions. We have everything available as we focus on certain areas that we need to improve. And, of course, staff development. Okay, Success for All. I'm really excited about what's happening with Success for All. We have purchased targeted treasure hunts this year, which are, in the past we've had treasure hunts, and now they're called targeted. And it was really a huge undertaking. We have purchased all new curriculum for the school. It's more focused. It's more skill-based. It's more rigorous. Higher interest. It's just all in all better. We like it. So anyway, that's in grades 2 through 5. And before that, we do the roots. And the wings is the targeted treasure hunt. So that's helping a lot. We've also started this year an SFA cafe. And Lorraine McCann, our facilitator, has done a wonderful job with SFA cafe where we invite you know, all the students that have read, we let them miss one night, so they do all this reading, and then they come and they get donuts. We are big on food and like milk, and that's a big reward. And then we have like a raffle and we have fabulous prizes. And it's really, we had a big improvement in students reading and turning in homework every night. And it's Monday through Thursday, so that was a big thing. All of our students are back at grade level. We're using the Scholastic Reading Inventory to better, more appropriately level. We are taking absolutely this year zero breaks, not one day off, which is extremely difficult, but we've done it. We started by assessing at week 7. There are 8-week sessions. We assess at week 7, and then we get that data in that week, and then the next week we level, and that Friday we switch the books, and then next Monday zero day. So it's fabulous. Our Success for All team that comes out has been very critical, and we've been very open to all of their suggestions. Again, we've prepared read and respond folders for all of our teachers to give to students so everything is uniform. One of our challenges has been with language arts. SFA is only really an hour and a half, so we have had to make the extra hour very meaningful, and we wanted to extend that, so we definitely teach 2.5 hours of literacy every day. We have implemented hanging writing portfolios. We do Waterford, but we're trying to very, very direct instruction on specific skills, and we are using supplemental resources for that. Okay, math. Again, our math scores are substantially better than our language arts, and we're continuing to we are also really implementing pacing guides this year for the first time. Again, it's 1 hour. We're doing a minimum of that, very standards-based. Okay, English language development. This was an area of need, as you could see by our scores. We're taking, we're really working to improve this. We're spending 30 minutes a day. We are using Into English. We have purchased Avenues, which is a supplemental program, and some open court materials. We've had some staff training. We're working really hard. This is no longer English learners as a subgroup. We made our AYP in it last year. We were exactly 24.4% proficient, exactly. And it's less than 15% now because we have really been diligent about redesignating also. Okay, after school tutoring, directed grades 2 through 5, and we're hitting target groups, again, standards-based. frequent monitoring of teaching and learning. We are really trying to use assessment data and get much better at what we do on a regular basis. We are using the SRI, which is the Scholastic Reading Inventory this year, which helps us a lot. We're using best benchmarks, the SFA summary. So we have a lot of tools to look at the data. We're also working with parents to really help them understand the standards. Okay, we really took on a lot this year with professional development. We had a lot of areas of need. We started the year, as I said earlier, with poverty. We've been working on differentiation. We've had several SFA trainings, both on targeted treasure hunts, because there's certainly enough different that we've struggled with them a little bit. And we've had more than one training when SFA has come out, and they've sort of done some by grade level and some overall things. One thing we've been trained on this year is the class council, which is a really important part of SFA, and that's helped us a lot with our discipline. It's part of SFA where it's a weekly meeting, and kids put things in, you know, that they want to talk about, and it's an overall explanation and how can we better work on these things. And then when there's conflict, they have a peace path. It's very regimented, and it's a wonderful way, and it's really helping resolve things in the classrooms. Further support our discipline, we have several programs in place. We're doing the district adopted second step and steps to respect, which has always been, you know, a wonderful program, but we're also supplementing that with tools for teaching. We also had an outside presenter come and help us with some very specific things to help improve our discipline. We've also been working on ELD at more than one staff meeting. We've looked at reading strategies to help improve comprehension. And CPM, we spent a lot of time on CPM. We're going to be visited, and we are working very, very hard. We're up to 4 crates. So, you know, we've been really trying to focus and make sure we're in compliance. We've also worked, of course, on the response to intervention, which is our new model for assessment, or not assessment, really, and, of course, our new PE program. So we've had a lot on our plate. We've been very busy. High levels of collaboration, again, we've very focused grade-level planning. We turn in agendas for grade-level meetings. We're trying to work closely with our parents. We're trying to translate everything that goes home. We have a weekly staff bulletin, so there's a lot of really focused communication. Effective use of fiscal and human resources. Of course, that's guided by our action plan, our single plan. We've aligned the budget with where we really see the needs. We've changed some, instead of placing money in personnel, we've tried to move some of that to purchase some target, to put all our money towards targeted treasure hunts this year. So we've realigned things. Our open supply room supports teachers. Okay, our supportive learning environment. I really talked about this. This is our positive discipline, and we've really made, we think, really huge strides here. We have a our discipline has improved dramatically. Okay, we've worked hard this year to have meaningful teacher goals and formal observations. All of our goals are aligned, and they're really on things where we want to work on, where we want to make improvements. We have 5 probationary teachers, so we're supporting all of them and helping them do PowerPoint. All right, high levels of parent and community involvement. Again, we're trying to extend everything we do. I've mentioned a lot of things here. We have a Grandparents' Day. We've had the great program already this fall. Our PTA, with the help of Christy and Kathy, has really grown this year. It's become very positive. We have a Grandparents' Day. We're reaching out to the community. I spent Saturday in the West Covina parking lot on the Kiwanis Bike Rodeo, where we provided free helmets bike helmets to third graders. So we're doing a lot of exciting things in the community. Okay, thank you. Thank you for this opportunity to present. Are there any questions? I talked kind of fast.
That's good.
Mike? You said in SFA that they are all at grade level. We don't have your AYP stuff in here, but there's a difference between SFA at grade level and what AIP would say.
Right, and you know what? When I said at grade level, I really meant we're instructing at grade level, where we had been doing some instructing below grade level. We're certainly not at grade level in any way
right,
in
okay.
our scores. We're at 37.7%.
Right, exactly, on AYP. Okay.
So that's a huge area of opportunity where we're really working to close that.
Is there a difference in the scores that you have between boys and girls in reading and math?
You know, there is. In language arts, there's a big difference are between 1 and 10 points about that boys are lower than girls. But surprisingly enough, in math, it's skewed. Two grade levels are higher and two grade levels are lower. So what we're really trying to do is, you know, look by grade level where we have the holes. We clearly have some standards missing, and that's where we're trying to direct, and we're also trying to target individual students. So we're trying to do sort of a global thing to start because we do have some problems and address those. We've also tried to target the reading with boys. The targeted treasure hunts are much higher interest. I mean, they're like Tuts, you know, the mummies and ancient things and... Cam Jansen, some more higher, at every grade level they're higher interest, and that's more interesting for boys. And also, we purchased $20,000 for our library last year, so, I mean, Captain Underpants, Harry Potter, things that boys want to read. So we've really got boys wanting to go to the library. So we're doing things to get boys interested in reading. We're trying.
Then you talked about... leveling, doing the testing every 7 weeks. How often do they have to switch teachers then? Do they switch out of a level?
We do it quarterly. So we test the seventh week of every quarter, and it turns out to be every 8 weeks. So we change teachers every 8 weeks. But in the past where we've ended at the 8 weeks, you know, before the end of school, we're going to go our last session right up to the end, you know, until we're having our last day activities. So our last session is going to be longer. So they do change four times a year.
Okay. And then the other question I have is you talked about targeted intervention. How many students are actually participating in that?
Well, we just changed. We had our first session in the fall. We started in October, and our second session is just starting this week, as a matter of fact. And it depends by grade level. We have teachers teaching at every grade level, second, third, fourth, and fifth. And we try to have on our roster between about 15 and 20, so we always have about 10 or 12, and then that pays for itself with supplemental funds.
Okay. Thank you.
Would you describe or go a little bit more in depth in this the CPM program?
Certainly. That's our categorical program monitoring, and this is every 4 years by the state, and it's extremely, extremely complicated, and we need to provide evidence of all the things we've done. Jan is like, oh, yes, you do. including EL, that we're teaching 30 minutes a day, so to do that, we have to have schedules, we have to show what the curriculum is, we have to have sample lessons at many grade levels. GATE is involved, how we spend all of our categorical monies and that we're doing it in doing it appropriately. So we have EL schedules, we have daily schedules, we have Help Me Joyce, we have
needs assessments.
We work on it every morning. It's just extremely complicated. We started out with one crate, and we're at four crates. We're being visited the 5th through the 9th, and February, thank you. And so we're really trying hard to right now we have just about maybe 92% copied of everything we need. Ellie and Helen and Kim has supported us with, you know, district documents, you know, the district LEA, and our single plan is in there, and we put the single plan in every category, and just practically everything we do is in there in all categories.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much. Very impressive program. Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Thank all the teachers.
Thank you. Orangewood.
All right. right. We met in closed session this evening, and I have a few things I need to report out. The following action was taken. The following action was taken in closed session, with the subsequent action being reported in open session as required by law. It was moved by George Fuller, seconded by Mike Spence, and approved to expel the following student from the schools in the district. Student number 115220 for various drug offenses, and the vote was 5-0. The pupil is expelled and not eligible to apply for readmission until the date set in her rehabilitation plan, and not to exceed the last day of the semester following semester expel. Following action was taken in closed session. It was moved by George Fuller, seconded by Mike Spence, that the following students have completed their terms and conditions of expulsion have been approved by the Board of Education for readmission to a school in the West Covina Unified School District to continue their education. An intake hearing has been held where the students presented that the rehabilitation plan of the Board of Education had directed them to complete has been accomplished in a satisfactory manner. The following students have been recommended to return to West Covina Unified School District. Student number 135059, 160366, 184429, 140237, and the vote was 5-0 on all items. Is there any other Board of Education reports this evening? George? Thank you. Daniel?
Yes. Good evening, everyone. Well, we've had, for our after-school tutoring, we've always had our math that's been going on all semester long, and we just started last Tuesday our 3-5 open tutoring to any students they want in the Media Center. And being that it's finals week this week, we had extra tutoring. Our Renaissance program encouraged students to go tutor for their finals by having this thing called a cocoa jam, and they give hot cocoa and chips and anything else they want to little snacks to students, and they have the top 10 students of each grade go to be tutors. And then students that come, they get the food and the drinks and stuff and get to tutor the whole time. And that's happening this whole week. And that was pretty cool that our Renaissance program is doing that. Again, it is finals this week, so it's kind of an exciting and crazy, hectic time at West Covina. Excited about the new semester. Kaplan, we have a free SAT workshop next week for students for 9th, 10th, and 11th grades. I don't know if they had this when I was earlier, because if they did, I didn't know about it, and I wish I went to it. But it's for SAT essays on our sports. They're all doing wonderful, except for our girls' water polo, but we're a wrestling program. We got four girls that got state titles. We had two fourth-place qualifiers, Loriel Cervantes, Omega Walters, and two second-place, Monique Sanchez, and we had, for 2 years in a row, Samantha Lopez. She's a sophomore. She got. It's pretty nice that she took first, again, state. Our basketball, one game short of being in first place. So we'll probably hopefully go into CIF, crossing our fingers for that one. Wrestling, we have a few state qualifiers for the guys. Soccer is in first place for our guys' soccer. So things are looking good for sports. And also, West Covina High School was we received recognition to be eligible for the Title I High Academic Achieving School Award. So we're doing pretty good, I guess. And that's what's happening over there.
As Daniel mentioned, he's in the process of studying for finals and has asked to be excused from the meeting this evening. So certainly we
thank you.
Look forward to hearing about your successes.
You guys did you want
to stay? Did you want to?
Orange would congratulate you.
You're certainly welcome to stay and listen. I promise it to be wild and exciting, and that. But if you choose to get home, get enough rest so that you can be in top shape for your students in the morning, you're certainly welcome to leave.
Thank you. My computer. We'll get that to him. I think so. Oh, it's Rubens.
All right, you're all set. Normally at this time, we list here items from the floor, but I have no formal requests for anybody to speak before the board this evening. Is there anybody who would like to address the board who has not given me a blue card? Hearing none, we'll move on to the organizational items of the agenda. Is there anybody who would like to take anything off of agenda, off of consent?
Item number five.
Item number seven and nine. Item seven and nine. Seven and nine? Yes. And nine. Mm-hmm. Anybody like to add anything to consent?
Number 19.
Is there a motion, please?
I'll move.
Second.
Moved by George Fuller and seconded by Mike Spence to approve the agenda and consent items, placing or removing item number 5 from consent, removing number 7 and 9 from consent, and adding number 19 to consent. Are there any objections? Hearing none, motion is so ordered. Next item on the agenda is an information report by San Jose Edison Academy regarding the proposal for converting the academy to an E2 school.
Okay, good evening. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to come here and sort of give you an update. Actually, it's not so much as a proposal to convert as it is just a report of information relating to the expansion of our Edison program and design elements at the school for 2007-2008. I just figured I would go ahead and put this into or print out the PowerPoint, and that way you can have it available. And it's only just a few. I've cut it down. And I'll try to get through this so I can give the opportunity to ask questions as they may come up. You might ask, what is E2? Basically, E2 follows the E1. It's the major research and development project. It's Edison's largest since the early 1990s. And it's to develop new managed school model and provide a platform for all products and other services. And it's built upon the originally validated E1 platform, the RAND study. They did a complete study of the E1, and it incorporates all of the very relevant, very successful elements of E1 while adding some additional components that will actually enable us to take our program to an even higher and more consistent achievement. And we have about 6 design priorities. And for those of you, and I think all of you have seen an original presentation where we have sort of the bubbles. And the bubbles identify what, when they were looking at this design, the old design, and trying to see about the new one, what were going to be the priorities of the Edison design. And the first one was involved the principal, and it involved school leadership. It involved having superior teachers in the classroom, a rich and rigorous and research-based curriculum. Culture, motivation, and service was one of the new components that have come up, the independent learning component, and then ongoing assessment and accountability was just an expansion. And I'd like to go ahead and just quickly break down some of these elements. The one thing about the E2, when we look at this expansion, many of the components that were in the E2 have already existed in our E1 school. San Jose Edison Academy is actually the top-performing Edison school in the nation. And there have been many types of things that we have done and implemented to already expand the program, in which Edison has been researching and monitoring us and looking at us over the course of the years and have decided to actually implement into its schools in the future. One example that I really don't talk about here involves the budget. It happens to be our business service manager. Edison had long ago had removed the business service manager. We had kept business service managers in, funded those out of our profits for our daycare, and had wonderful success with Kathy handling finances and different types of things and the school facilities, why I could keep my eye on the ball and spend it at least 85% of my time dealing with student achievement. And that happens to be an element that is in the E2 as well. One of the things that we'll have with school superior school leadership, while I will be remaining the principal of San Jose Edison through the expansion into E2, there are other schools that will be Edison schools that will be bringing on new principals. And in front of you are just some of those: the principal profile, aggressive external recruitment. They're going to implement a year-long full and part-time fellowship program for new principals, in which they will be following and shadowing other successful Edison principals. And we will, of course, have the instructional leadership program. We have several conferences during the year in which we receive training, a week-long summer training. And I bring this to your attention because I, for the most part, will be on the other end. I will probably be one of the mentoring principalships. I currently am Edison's national advisor for the Aspiring Leadership Program, and I'm working on training the next generation of Edison principals. That tends to be one of my jobs, including the principalship. So I will be involved in this in a different type of aspect. When it talks about teachers, I'm actually so proud to say that of my 56 teaching staff, there isn't one single teacher that I am recommending for any type of replacement. They are all extremely solid. We all they're on a continuum of growth and proficiency, but it's unbelievably a solid staff. And Edison wants to literally replicate that in a lot of its Edison schools. And we'll be looking at teacher profiles. Edison believes that to have superior teachers, you need superior comprehensive training programs where you have pre-service before they even start in the classroom. You have a daily PD hour where we have an hour every day that we can do additional professional development. And we are doing online resources. We have Edison evenings where teachers can sit at home, dial in, drink their coffee or tea, and be in service on all kinds of strategies from ELD to differentiation, whatever they have offered, and leadership development programs for coordinators and lead teachers. When you look at the rich, rigorous, and research-based curriculum, I think when Edison opened, they spent about $45 million in 4 years researching the best practices across the nation and the world when they developed their design. And so as we go into a second round of Edison, they believe it is very, very important to literally evaluate everything we have and everything that is out there to see is there something else that is going to help move our students forward. And so they've set up rubrics and research-based evaluations for all of their curriculum. They will develop companion guides for state-specific lesson planning. And development professional development program will focus on the new and existing design elements. The next design highlight, we talk about culture, motivation, and service. The core values will continue. Our 8 core values have been a cornerstone of our learning environment, and that will, of course, will continue. There will be a comprehensive positive behavior management system. We currently have that. We may be receiving additional resources and information to strengthen those. School culture kits and a fully programmed morning meeting focusing on student motivation with video support and character and ethics. This last bullet is one of the ones I was actually very excited about receiving some new resources, because at the junior academy level, it's my belief that it's a social-emotional that tends to get in the way of whether students are successful or not. Many of those students are quite capable, and for reasons that we don't know yet about brain theory in adolescence, there are a lot of mental blocks, and a lot of it deals with the motivation or lack of. And so Edison is really actually spending a lot of research and development time and money into getting into what is making what are making these kids tick, and how are they going to be able to reach out to these kids in some way that will motivate them and help them with their achievement. When we talk about the independent learning, this is an expansion. It's a new component, but it uses an expansion of what we already have exist. For those of you who might remember back in 98, we actually took benchmarks on the paper, and we scored them, and we took them every quarter, and it was difficult. And then along came our benchmarking system, electronic, and it allowed the students to take them right away, and teachers had at their fingertips immediate results that disaggregated the data, drilled down to specific standards and the skills. We now would like to incorporate that idea with what we call core-owned independent learning. And it would look for 45 minutes to an hour a day, every single day, where students would have the ability and the opportunity to go into an independent learning situation. Now, that actually may raise some fear. I know it raises the fear in my teachers and different things. Like, what does that look like? How are we going to be trained? What will students do? But when we talk about core-owned, we're talking about the core teachers, when we math, science, social science, and the language arts, in which those teachers will actually outline specific activities that will be happening within that, whether it's the project-based learning, whether it's the tutorial on the computer, which I'll get down to early or later, and that will be the daily formal independent learning, what we call the IL. If we have, we'll need anywhere from 2 to 3 spaces for the independent learning, in which we will have a state-of-the-art library media center with the lab. It may look like pods with whiteboards and the ability for students to become interactive within their lessons. We will have a benchmarking system that we call Aspire. Currently, our benchmarking system assesses the student every month, and it gives us that data. It gives us those numbers that let us know if our students are moving towards proficiency on the state test. Now the benchmarking system will not only be able to assess, it will now also do a diagnostic, and it will be able to identify on its own what specific type of skills each individual learner will need. Then it will turn around, and it will then prescribe a certain lesson, a certain tutorial, whatever that student needs. So a student could go into the computer lab on a daily basis 2 times a week and get a very specific lesson that has been generated for them based upon their benchmark results. And then we will have electronic management of assignment and progress, and that will be with the Vista system. Edison is currently, they don't have these now, they have the frameworks, but they are working on this as we go through. Some of these are concrete. Many of these concepts are still being researched. Focus groups are being held. Interviews are being handled. I mean, just a lot of this is being wrapped up now into where they believe they're going to go with some of these design elements. And then finally, the ongoing assessment and accountability. We have a partnership with Harris Interactive. Many of you remember that all of our staff, students 3rd through 8th grade, as well as parents, are given the Harris Interactive survey every single year to actually identify our success with the customer satisfaction. We will use them again to gauge the satisfaction with and opinions about our beta, what has been going on, how we've implemented some of the new programs, so we can get that information in looking at as we redesign some things. And we'll have an upgraded benchmark system scheduled for 2008. And Edison will be designing the new 5 points of accountability system that will also focus on quality implementation as well as the outcomes. Currently, our 5 points of accountability are our student achievement, financial management, design, customer satisfaction, and operational excellence. And so they will be looking at quality implementation, which will probably fall under operational excellence as well. So that's, I know that there's been a lot of questions about, and sometimes we look at E2 as if this great big animal that's sort of out there and it's going to come over and be put itself into and take the and replace what we have. But in actuality, it's not. We are keeping many, in fact, probably 75% of our structures, our design, because Edison truly believes that its schools have some terrific things that are going for it, and they want to keep what's working well. But they also realize that while we might not be a program or a school in program improvement, we are a school of continuous improvement. And every single year, my staff is literally pulling out all stops to identify how we're going to get our kids who are already here even higher. And so what the E2 design allows us to do, it brings in resources that allows us to pull and use other types of things to take our kids to the next level. And that's what actually student achievement is all about. So with that, I would like to entertain any questions.
Thank you very much for coming. We appreciate the presentation. Jessica? Questions?
I have quite a few, actually. You sort of briefly mentioned that you changed the PowerPoint presentation that we had previously received from the cabinet. Why is that?
I didn't change. What I did was I said, for those of you who have seen the PowerPoint presentation, you will remember the bubbles. Mm-hmm. And so what I did, as opposed to putting the bubbles, I just did them linear. I mean, I just put them down as bullets.
Okay.
So I wanted to make the point that they were the same. They were just done in a different format.
Okay. Let's see. Will there be facility changes for the independent learning classes?
What we're looking at is having to redesign what may exist, and Edison is committed to the capital of what it would take. They will not be coming to the board to say, we need money to possibly put up a wall, or we need money to do certain computers. Some of the areas, we currently already have 3 computer labs at the site where we are located. We also have a cafeteria in the old Willowwood site that has been upgraded to the extent that it could easily house one of these learning labs. We're at the point of just investigating what it would take, and that would certainly be an item that would come back to the board as far as looking at if there would need to be a facility change, like maybe a wall that isn't a bearing wall that happens to be between two of our portables, because it is a permanent portable school. So the beauty of it is it's not concrete and mortar. It's actually permanent portable. And so it's quite easy to make the design changes to fit what our needs may be. But it's certainly something we would bring
back. To the
board? Absolutely, because it would involve facility. Now, we're hoping...
But you also said that Edison would cover the cost?
Yeah, they are committed. We have had dialogue about what it would take, and if we're going to be looking at design changes, whether we go out for philanthropy, whether we go out to find grants. It's also important to know, as a charter school, we do have money available to the school through certain propositions in charter schools that the district could very easily take advantage of in the near future. And I think with the Prop 39 funds and those types of things that could benefit both Edison and the district in upgrading facilities at the state's expense.
One concern that brings up to me is in the original PowerPoint presentation, it says that Edison does not guarantee the ability to raise their share. So you're saying that Edison does have the funds now, but...
What,
which one is
are you referring to, the management contract, or are you
referring
to the original?
It's under contract review, and it's at the end when they're talking about what we'd have to look at in the contract.
Okay, and that was a previous one, and that's probably more generic because they have spoken with over 20 districts about expansion of their program because they are not doing it in every single school. They have selected some of the highest performing schools who will be able to get the design implemented the most successfully. And so that was most likely a generic statement.
So at this point you're saying Edison would cover the cost of renovating the school?
Yes, and I've even had a conversation to make sure that was clear and I wouldn't be standing up here promising you something that wouldn't happen, and it has been directed.
Here, it's public record.
Yeah.
What are the 3 other beta sites?
The 3, we have 2 that are currently... We have 2 that are currently in Dayton, Ohio, and we have some conversations that are going on with some other ones across the nation. We also have the possibility.
Not three, you just have two for sure.
We have the two, but I don't think I'm really at liberty to say who, what districts are speaking to until it's announced through them, but I do know that.
Leave it an open question for you when Edison decides. Mm-hmm. Okay. How are the beta sites selected?
Well, the beta site was selected based upon a very, it was a very tough rubric that they established. They looked at a number of variables across the board, the success of the school, the strength of the teaching staff, the strength of the principal, relations with boards. They looked at a number of the criteria, and they went down from 20 to 10 to 7. It was a very rigorous process, and I'm quite proud of the fact that Edison felt that the partnership with this school district, the success of its school, that they really targeted our school and said, we believe this is a school, this school is one of the best places to implement some of these design expansions.
What type of program changes will there be in, like, the literacy program, the math program?
The math program will remain the same. It's a Chicago Everyday Math that is research-based out of the University of Chicago and is completely responsible for outstanding math scores. Our McDougall-Attell that we have at the middle school remain the same. The Success for All program will most likely remain the same, but because we have had phenomenal success, but a lot of that deals with how well it's implemented by the school and the teaching staff. And so I have not had that confirmed as yet. Our History Alive will remain the same. The science is it's completely aligned with the California standards. That will most likely remain the same. The motivation curriculum, the core values curriculum, will be different.
And how will the new curriculum be funded?
Through Capital Edison and out of our operating expenses, my budget. We receive the IMF funds. And there may be even some philanthropy. I mean, it's known that we have been a school that has always, we have actually sought out hundreds of thousands of dollars. We sought out over $700,000 in philanthropy to upgrade the 10,000 square foot building that is now currently on that site that is currently being used.
In the original PowerPoint presentation, you mentioned that the local team is currently being changed. What changes are being made?
The local team? I'm clueless to what you're referring to. I don't have the visual in front of me.
Speaking about the regional team.
Oh, it's currently being
your regional team.
That may have been with the map process. We've had some design changes based upon the hierarchy of management. For example, we used to have a regional VP that was strictly in California. Our regional VP, or our general manager, now oversees California and Arizona. She then has basically a regional person in California that would be the equivalent of a superintendent / assistant superintendent that deals with operation and with the implementation of the design. And then we have our principals, and they've now reinstituted the business service manager into the schools.
Okay. In this presentation, you also had that the contract would have to be changed to reflect an R&D endeavor. So do you believe that this needs a contract change to move to an E2?
No, because, again, I'm not – that's probably some of the generic statement. The original piece that you received was sent out, I believe, through Chris Whittle in the early time during when we were just coming out. And, I mean, this is old. This is September-October development. Now, our research and development – Edison is spending $15 million research and developing its E2 concept and its component. And that's not contractual. If we're talking contractual, that could be needed to be a vote or whatever. We're talking about the management agreement per se, not design implementation. Design implementation is at the I guess that's sort of what Edison has been responsible for doing for this board for 9 years. That's not something we typically come back and talk about. We inform the board, but this design implementation has always been at the prerogative of Edison schools. That's what they've been brought on for.
currently we're using a research-based model. It's my understanding that this E2 will be a testing site.
Based upon research-based curriculum.
Implemented anywhere? Research to the board so we have a better idea?
Oh, absolutely. One of the things I think the board probably wants to realize is that Edison, is a company, and they're a for-profit company. And if they're going to continue in an existence, it is their duty and to their benefit that they literally design one of the best products out there for managing schools, because that is how they get their contracts. And they will not get contracts unless they are successful in their schools. And so up front, Edison has always been known for being extremely diligent about researching and bringing in the best that they could find, because their company's longevity depends on it. And so they're taking this extremely seriously, and they're not going to try to implement something into our school that has not been research-based, that has not gone through several committees, that has not been out there. Now, what that may look like in a classroom may be something that we'll work through some of those kinks. You are always going to have that in any implementation. But again, Edison believes that our school is one of the best schools that they have for being able to implement those and work through those design changes.
Will the teacher-to-student ratio change?
No. It'll be 24-1 K through 3 and 34-1 4 through 8.
How will the independent learning labs work? I know it mentioned, but this may not be correct. There will be student prefects helping the teacher?
Well, in some cases, we're not moving into that yet, which is part of a service. That's something that will be looked into more. Edison is still doing research. We currently already have student service at our school. In fact, many schools already do. Students take up things to the office. They collect a roll sheet. Edgewood Middle School, I know, has instructional aides that are students that help the teachers with their paperwork. I had one when I taught at Edgewood. We currently have students help students with technology, fix technology. All those things already exist. This is just an expansion, a more formal program of that. But what you just referred to, can you state that again, what you specifically asked about the independent learning lab? It would be 60 computers roughly to a lab. We may take in 3 specific classrooms of 20 each. They will go in by grade levels. Those teachers will have been responsible for already having designed and planned out specifically what those students are going to be doing on a daily basis. Those projects will relate specifically to what they're learning in the classroom as an expansion. It might be a project-based learning. They may be working on the missions, and instead of sending home a thing saying, okay, kids, we want you all fourth graders to go home and build a mission and bring it back, they will actually be working in cooperative groups to do that research and develop a project within the school, and they can do that during the independent learning. They can also take their benchmarks during that time. They can receive their tutorials during that time. There are several things that they will be able to do, and it's very it's monitored, it's very intentional, it's very purposeful. It's not just go in, kids, have a good time, see what you want to do on the computer, and we'll see you in 45 minutes.
Salary?
I just wanted to ask for a clarification. I believe her question was, what was the ratio? And for that 1.5 hours in the learning lab, is the ratio still the same that you had quoted earlier?
The ratio will be 45 minutes to 1 hour. That will be in the independent learning lab. And what you will have in there, you could have 2 teachers in the learning lab, and a third, depending on how the schedule, and right now the schedules are still being fleshed out as far as how we're trying to fit in where the learning lab fits and those types of things. But the highest ratio would be a 30-1. With 2 teachers for sure within the 60. But we also have technology staff, clerical staff, who can also be there and assist, that currently do assist in the labs now. So it could go anywhere from 20-1 to 30-1, but it would not be higher.
But they would be teachers in there.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And not just teachers in there, but teachers who have designed the specific program that the students will be doing.
Okay. How will the salaries be impacted by the change of teachers, yourself?
The salaries will be, we currently are already ahead of the West Covina salary scale because we teach 7 hours a day. And there is talk, we already received the bonuses. It will probably continue to be status quo where we will be earning more than your typical elementary school or administrator. I have no idea.
What do you offer yourself in comparison to other principals in the district?
I don't know a percentage. It could be anywhere from 15% to 25%, depending on how. But also, you almost have to look at the amount of the responsibility, the amount of accountability, the amount of the work year. There's a lot of different factors that are in there.
How are bonuses for you determined?
On a very strict guideline through my evaluation. I'm evaluated quite extensively by rubrics. The rubrics I'm evaluated is probably, I don't know, maybe 35 pages long, and in three different areas in which I must not only write my goals at the beginning of the year, middle of the year, I meet with my supervisor at the end of the year, I'm rated whether I'm beginning, developing, proficient, or exemplary. I am rated in all 5 points of accountability. I receive, it's very extensive, and it's extremely objective as far as when they give out the bonuses. When I give out bonuses to my staff, it is very objective based upon student achievement and other type of factors.
For bonuses you receive, does it come through the district, or do you get a 1099?
No, it comes through New York.
And do you get a 1099 for that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, let's put it this way. We lose 47% of our bonus through taxes and everything else. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But
you wouldn't get a 1099.
No, we get taxed right out.
You're not an outside service employee.
Yes, thank you.
W-2. As an employee, you can't get a 1099.
And that's what we wanted to see.
Just a minute. Mr. Spence has asked to be excused from the meeting this evening. He has family affairs to attend.
Does the amount of funds you send to the corporate office impact your bonus at all? Is it one of the areas that you get a bonus?
No. What it is, it's part of the financial management and the 5 points of accountability. But it's not. I don't know if you're looking for the relationship as far as the more we send, the more bonus we get. No, there's not that type of relationship. The bottom line is when what we send as far as our gross site contribution is, and financial management being a 5 point of accountability, is that they want fiscal soundness. They want a principal and a business service manager who knows how to handle that budget and make sure that that staff and those students have what it takes to get the job done with student achievement.
On average, what's the percentage that gets sent to the corporate office?
Off the top of my head, it might be 12-13%. But it's important to note, too, it's just not a standard 12 to 13. The Edison, New York would be just like the district office here with the overhead. We may be sending a certain amount back that you may see on a line item, and that line item isn't profit. That line item is going back to the corporation, and they will spend money on my training, the teacher training, when we have conferences, how they give support for curriculum, research and development. So all of those factors are built into what goes back to Edison from each of his schools on a monthly basis.
You may not know the answer to this question, but I'm hoping that you can find it out if you don't. And SEC documents before Edison went private, they stated that they needed to pull more money out of the schools to cover their corporate overhead. Is that still the position of Edison? And if not, how have they covered their overhead?
No, that's not the that, and it was prior to them going private. When they went public, and when we had those difficulties through when the Philadelphia deal, and we received the 40 schools, or then it was 20 schools, there was the financial problems. And yes, just like any other district would do. If indeed this district, and we've done it for several years, was having financial difficulty, you would look out to where you are putting the majority of your money to have to make those cuts or draw that money back in from your schools, whether it's personnel, supplies. I mean, I know I was a district principal.
Well, it was
Well, it's actually very similar. It's the same thing.
It was a little bit more severe than that because they were actually tagged by the SEC for accounting irregularities.
Well, but that's not the question you asked. I was just explaining the process by which I was, you know, tightening our belt in how we were going to get through those lean years, just like districts tighten their belt as well.
Decided to pull money out of the schools instead of maybe cutting down the corporation itself.
And they did. There were 45 people who were fired during that time. And by the way, that irregularity wasn't so much a fiscal irregularity. What it was Edison, in its documents, was claiming specifically on how they were paying employees. And because the money was being identified going through Edison, when in some cases Edison was responsible for paying my teacher's salaries, but because the information came through the county, it looked like district were paying the employees. And so it was recommended that they change the language in order to fit.
Showing Edison as having $20 million, it actually reflected like the $1 million they were actually getting. I read the 300-page report.
Mm-hmm. As I did, too.
Let's see. How many Edison schools have closed?
Just through the year. On any given year, it could be closed, open, closed, open, closed, open. We may have two closed. For example, Dallas, all six schools closed because there was a $39 million deficit in Dallas schools. And so they had to close those schools. But meanwhile, we had seven more open up through Alliance in Hawaii. There's sort of an ebb and flow with the nature of school.
General reason, if there is one, that the schools close?
The general reason tends to be economics. Very few Edison schools close because they did not do a good job. And if it was not a good job, for example, in Chester, Pennsylvania, where the district had to be taken over by the state and Edison was not allowed to go in there and put the reform in like they wanted to, that contract finally stopped because of the nature of the contract. Edison also, many of their accounts have closed because they have deemed it so, not because the district has pulled out. So it should be noted as well.
You mentioned that you do fundraising. Do you have an average number of how do you fundraise, first of all?
At the site levels through PTO.
Okay.
And then at our level, it might be everything from grants from Wells Fargo. We received a $1,000 grant. We received a $2,000 grant from instruments. We go out there and we do that on the community level. And then when we look at the corporate level, we may go through, for example, Rose Hills Foundation. I was able to secure $200,000 that we put into the renovation of the 10,000 square foot building. The Fisher Funds, those are the types of big time fundraisings that that we may do for technology support. And it varies in any given year.
How many students, say, start in kindergarten and stay in the school through all levels?
Well, our mobility rate is about a 4%. Last year it was 2 or 3. We lost maybe 3 third graders last year out of 120. I probably have easily 70 to 80% of my 8th graders who started with us in kindergarten.
How are the surveys returned to the school?
The teachers and students take them electronically, where we never see them whatsoever. And as far as parents, we mail them home with a self-stamped, self-addressed envelope. They are sealed. They come back and must remain sealed. They're all put into a box, and they're shipped off to Edison. And then Harris Interactive calculates all the scores.
Are there names on them?
No. I don't know. They could put their names on them, but I never open them. And, you know, just like any bubble test, if you're looking for the integrity or the validity, if we tried to open up and start changing those, believe you me, Harris Interactive would be able to easily see.
I'm just curious as, you know, does a student take it home to their parent? They write their name on it, and then it gets...
Nope. We mail everything home, and it comes back sealed, and then we ship it off.
What are the standards that a student at Edison has to meet, and what happens if they can't meet those standards?
Well, they have to meet the state standards. And if they don't, we pull out all stops to help them meet it. We've never, ever removed a student from our school. In fact, we've probably had maybe, I was just talking to you know, Rob, about this today. Out of 9 years, maybe 5 students have been out of Edison, and 4 of those from expulsions through drugs over the course of the years. And 1 student that was out of district in which he was going to be very harmful to staff and students, we finally did remove, and that's 1 out of 9 years.
Is parental involvement required?
No, it's highly encouraged.
Is there special things students receive if their parents come to things?
Probably like any, we keep track. And the reason why we keep track is because, for example, I just recently sent out, we had some low turnout from parents at our curriculum nights, and our teachers put a lot of time. And we were very concerned that we had a lower turnout. So I sent a letter home expressing my concern and about it and said, you know, we really want you attending. But at the bottom, we had a survey and said, please tell us what you can about why you're not coming. Yes, if you're coming, do you have suggestions? No, I'm not coming. Do you have suggestions? Because we wanted to hear from them why they're not, so we can look at our practices and say, are we starting too early? Should we have daycare? You know, those types of things in order to raise the parent participation.
Where does the money go from your child care?
Our money from child care can go in any specific program that I'd like to see it go in. We spend, Kathy Cooper does an amazing job running our daycare program. We started very, very small and have grown to over 100-something children, and that money we can put into resources to support teachers. One example is, you know, I have 56 staff. If they all stood around the copier and tried to get their things done, they'd never get a lunch. And so we have hired on what we call the Kinko ladies. And they put in, you know, and they stand around doing all of our types of things. And that's an excellent service, support service to our teachers. And that's paid out of some of the profits that we make out of our daycare.
I remember from one of my visits to the campus that a lot of your teachers are training teachers. Does that take time out of, do they take time away from teaching the students they have to train others, or is it done on vacations, off days?
No, it's usually done during the summer or at a conference, and there might be 1 conference in the fall where we'll have our trainer teachers go, just like I may go to the conference. But because we have built within our design professional development within the day, and those teachers have that as well, they will go out and they can actually do it during their professional development time. We can do it after school during our block of time when we have our curriculum rotations. We have a lot of opportunity for people to go out and be trainers without impacting. You know, the question I would ask is, you'd almost have to look at the results. If I really thought it was having a negative impact, probably wouldn't be getting the results that we're getting. But we seem to manage both.
How much time do you spend away from the campus?
It varies. And I'll be honest, I probably spend more time away than your average principal. But it's the job. It's a different nature of the job. And I also have different responsibilities than your typical principal. But again, if the school were on the decline or failing or not producing the results that this board would expect, then I think we could possibly have some problems. But that's not happening. It's all being able to be done and managed and still have a successful school.
Okay. You mentioned that there has been program expansion without board approval. Were those expansions research-based, and what were they?
Yeah, our benchmark system. We originally had paper and pencil and quarterly, and we had moved into electronic monthly. Then we moved into electronic monthly and the ability to drill down into a whole continuum of services for teachers. And that's one example. SFA. SFA is a research-based curriculum. As Mary pointed out earlier, she has invested a lot of money in the targeted treasure hunts, which did not exist 3 years ago, nor did the fast-track phonics. These are all new components that have been brought into our design that are research-based and that we just added in order to move our students further along.
That is all I have. I'll go ahead and let them ask questions.
And you know, if you have any other questions, I think I've given you my email. I will be more than happy to get those answers for you through email or any. Just let me know.
Mr. Foy. In our contract, it says the charter school will implement Edison School Design, and Edison will provide education management services as well as related services and equipment. That really revolved around E1, right? Is that correct? That's what you referred. The Edison Design was E1.
Well, it designs around the management agreement and the contract you have with Edison. The E1, Mr. Fuller, is just a title that they called what we had for sake of a better, you know, because now we're going on to not so much E2. It's not like it's a whole new program, needs a whole new contract. It's just an expansion of what we have. And to differentiate between the two, they've identified and labeled one E2, E1, what already exists in school, and E2, some of the changes that would be coming in. But any contract that is in place is still part of the management agreement and how Edison does business with boards of education or charter boards.
So what does the language mean, the charter school will implement the Edison school design?
Is that we will be implementing the design that is established by Edison. Yes. And if Edison expands on its design and comes out just like it did with its benchmarks, its SFA, its whatever new curriculum, its History Alive, we then are responsible as an Edison school to implement the design that is outlined by Edison.
Well, it seems that I remember going to San Antonio. I remember other board members going to other locations, taking tours, having ongoing discussions, and it was fairly well set down what the Edison School designed, what was implemented, and this is what you're going to get, and this is what we guarantee the parents. And then when we renewed it again for 5 years, it was the Edison School design again, based upon what had come about. And in fact, it says it automatically renews as long as you meet growth, but there was an Edison School design, as I remember, and it was, as it was based in the contract, on 8 years of research. There was 8 years of research preceding it, 8 to 9 years of research, and it's in the contract, that preceded it, and based upon that research, there would be an Edison School design. Did I hear wrong when I voted for it last time? First time.
The elements that you suggest and what you're probably talking about are the client conferences in which you're invited, where they outline to you the specific global design elements. But to break each element down into actually how it is implemented, the specifics, the day-to-day, is not something that generally made its way to boards of education. It was up to Edison to make sure boards were educated on what that design looks like, how it's implemented, but the day-to-day, the growth, and as things roll through, design implementations have been made. It's the nature of Edison coming out and upgrading as we go throughout the year. They don't wait 5 years for a new contract to decide to implement something that could change children's lives immediately. That's not the nature of Edison. They weren't going to wait to give us electronic benchmarks until we renew. Edison realized that it was the best thing teachers could have in their hand and students could have in their hand to inform instruction, and they implemented that based upon their ability to bring about design changes.
Well, then what about the contract proposal that says that you shall notify us by January 1st, 2008, you want to renegotiate the contract or have any changes for June 30th, 2008. When you signed up on the contract for a five-year extension of the Edison School design, right. And then it automatically will renew back to the old contract unless there's a provision for renegotiation. And I kind of take this as a notification you want to renegotiate because you now have a change coming about, a significant change. And we'll go into
what
there's some other questions I have to go with that might be answered. But it says they're now notifying us before January 1st, 2008, to renegotiate the contract for June 30th, 2008.
If I could clarify the language, what you're referring to is a management contract, and that's how this Board of Education does business with Edison. And it deals with things from special ed to insurance to teacher tenure to buybacks to the financial things. The other part of it tends to be a design that may be wrapped up into a charter school agreement or an expansion or what may go up to the charter school board. The two are quite different, and it was never intended for Edison's ability to implement design changes to be part of something that is part of the management agreement. And you'll notice when it talks about curriculum, design, implementation, that's actually a separate document from what you're referring to.
Can you just look at this and tell me if this is what you're referring to? Because it doesn't look like it's a separate document to me.
Well, the appendices, the appendix are where you have it, and the appendix contain the curriculum aspect and what tends to be our charter agreement.
So just look at it and tell me if that's what you're referring to when you're talking about the management contract.
See, the appendices, and I have it backwards. This is actually the San Jose, the charter renewal. And within that, the appendices are the management agreement. And that is the number one that talks about how we do business, how things get paid, those types of things, that how the relationship exists, and mostly it's financial. And it would be terms of if we are not successful. It would be terms of, like Mr. Fuller pointed out, by this date. If the board has a concern about whether or not being paid by Edison or we weren't doing well, they have 90 days to make, you know, those are the types of things that are in that management language. But it also says in here, if I'm not mistaken, on page 39, there's a clause that specifically states that Edison contracts, or the district contracts with Edison to manage the school. And that's what happens. You have gone out and you've brought in a company to manage your charter school. How they manage that charter school within the course of its design is to their discretion. And that's how it has been for 9 years. It has never been something that comes up to this board to say, we'd like to put electronic benchmarks in.
Let me clarify something.
I mean,
I have to look at it again to see. House says that's different.
Just a minute. Nobody's going anywhere. Just be patient.
So what she's saying is that the terms are there.
You raise an interesting point. You said this contract entitles you to run the school, as I interpreted what you just said, the way the management says, and we are as the oversight.
No, I didn't say that. I said this board contracts with Edison to manage its school, and it's the discretion of Edison how they implement that design. And what type of design they bring into the school.
Well, that's where you have. Let me ask you a couple more questions. It says here, I have one from, it has E2 and has an Edison School's logo, and says E2 is a research and development project to create Edison's next generation managed school model, as well as other services. And in going through the rest of here, my impression is this is an experimental model that they're getting ready to research to see if it works to implement in the rest of schools, and it kind of behooves your school to go there. And that's from what it says. And it says here, research and development project. Now, you're telling me that it's not. It's just all kind of done, and it's now becoming confusing.
I think I said it's probably a mixture, that they're not going to implement and ask us to implement things that they have not researched, that they have not looked into, that they have not evaluated, that they don't think is going to be in the best interest of the children. Now, how that model may be implemented to the best of its ability, those are the types of things that may come through a beta site. But it's not like they're coming off the top of their heads thinking, you know what, this sounds good, and they talk about it on a Saturday and say, let's see how it will work. There have been thousands of hours and millions of dollars that are being invested in research and development to come up with these specific design expansions and changes that they would like to see in this school.
Okay. I have been going through here. Your fourth and fifth grade are now under one teacher. Is that correct? one teacher teaches a self-contained class,
yes,
graders.
Yes, they're all self-contained.
Subjects.
Every teacher is that way except Junior Academy.
Okay. In reading this, and maybe I misinterpreted, there will be two teachers for fourth and fifth grade, one teacher teaching certain subjects, another teacher teaching certain subjects, and then a third teacher will move into the Independent Learning Academy to run that one. Are you going to change teachers in the fourth and fifth grade? Are there going to be two teachers per class, and how will that work?
And that's actually a design change that is not going to be implemented. At our school, we will continue with self-contained, and we will most likely have team teaching. We already have team teaching. I have four fifth grade teachers, two teach science, two teach social science. It just makes better sense that you can become an expert in that area and teach those children, and they actually then will swap the kids. And so we currently have it. Now, where the difference will be, we will not have just one teacher in the independent learning lab. We will be sending in the core teachers instead, as far as our model at our school is going to go.
Okay, one of the selling points of Edison was that we would have, it had more days, more hours to deliver for classrooms. But won't this in the classroom? But won't the independent learning design take away time with the teacher? Their overall time with the teacher is an hour and a half a day, is the way it reads here.
No, it's 45 minutes to an hour, and it's more than likely our day will be expanded to 7.5 hours. That's something that is currently being looked at, as well as how we impact our day. We look at transitions, we look at morning meetings, we look at lunches. Are there other areas that we can sort of bring that time out? And you know, Mr. Fuller, it's important probably to note that independent learning or learning away from the teacher is not always a negative thing. And when Edison said that you would have a core teacher, we still have that existing. But the independent learning lab is now another avenue, another resource to allow the child, I mean, the amount of time that can be spent on differentiated instruction. The fact that a teacher now has available at their fingertips a computer system that would allow a gifted student in science to go way beyond what those other students would be, at the same time tutoring the students aren't not meeting proficiency. Teachers are pulling their hair out nowadays trying to figure out how you meet the needs of every child, how you close that achievement gap. The independent learning is a phenomenal, just an opportunity that teachers will have. It will help us work smarter, not harder, in trying to get our higher level learners advanced even more and bringing up our lower level learners as well.
There's a provision in the contract that calls for teachers will not earn more money, or will be repaid, Edison School personnel will be paid approximately the same salary as West Covina Unified Schools, school district teachers, administrators, things of that nature. The way the contract reads, the way I was reading it, you have earned more money. There was a bonus system, there was things on, but the way you're explaining, especially with the value added situation, there will be a significant increase. How do you justify that against the contract where you're supposed to be earning approximately the same?
The spirit of the contract was written to actually protect a charter school teacher, not to protect the district teachers. It was written because in many cases, the Edison teachers or even charter schools, not only were they not making the typical salaries of an average teacher, they weren't even being provided STIRS nor benefits. And some of the horror stories you would hear about some of the early charters were that they were going into they weren't making the same salary, they didn't have the credentials, they weren't paying into STIRS, and they didn't have benefits. And so as a protection, actually, it was that if anything, these teachers are going to be making this type at least. But the bonus system has always been implement. I mean, our ability to give bonuses, what we have, has always been there for the 9 years of our existence.
Well, you're going to have a value added for increased scores, and it seems to increase. But wasn't there a provision in here that I saw that said that if a teacher doesn't have a value added or there's a value decrease, that teacher will be placed on probation for the next year?
That's probably part of our evaluative system, and I'll tell you, I have carried that out to the letter of the contract. My expectation for teachers who teach at San Jose Edison is that their number one point of accountability is student achievement. And when those students enter that classroom, I outline for them exactly where those students are on that proficiency scale. And their job as a teacher is to move those kids through that year at least the same, if not advancing them, to bring up our lower level learners and close that gap. That is their job, whether they work at Edison or they work for West Covina Unified. And if those teachers are not performing in that manner throughout the years, absolutely, they will be placed on some type of a contract. And the difference is we see it as support. We don't see it as something that people rally around to protect the teacher. If a teacher needs help, if they're not being able to make the grade for one reason or another, then we do everything possible from coaching, professional development, lead teacher, observations, whatever they need to support them, to lift them up. And after everything we do, if they still can't deliver what those kids deserve, then they don't work at the school.
My concern is running on that type of situation where a person is going to go on probation and the next year they lose their job. How do you protect the students that are at the bottom of the spectrum and the top of the spectrum? There will be those students that are having difficulty consistently year after year that aren't going to have a value added. All our expectations are good, but over time, at the RSP student or the student that is struggling, what kind of protection is in there that the teacher will not shy away from that student, but rather just want to select ones that look like they're going to be good for value added to protect their jobs?
No, actually the protection is for those students that teacher needs to be able to deliver on what they were hired for. And if they can't, then the greatest protection I can give a student is not to put a teacher who is not qualified in a classroom. And that's the bottom line. I mean, if I have a fourth grader and they have a teacher, that's that kid's one shot at fourth grade. Why would I ever, how can I look a parent in the eye and say to them, this person's fine, they're fine, if I wouldn't put my own kid in that class? So I have made it literally one of my personal goals that every single teacher that I have at that school, I'd put my own kid in that classroom. And if I can't do that, and I can't look a parent in the eye and say that, then I can't have that teacher. And it's not only me, Mr. Fuller. It's every single teacher at my site expects me to behave in that exact way. Because they know that our site, we are as good as our weakest link. And they know it takes one teacher that can lower an entire grade level when it comes to scores. And they know it's a matter of just a few teachers per year that can change the course of a child's history and make it to where they have no options. If they get 2 to 3 bad teachers in a year in a row, it's devastating what happens to that child. And because of that teacher factor, and as long as I'm principal, I will never allow that to happen with any child as long as I can help it.
Well, then the criteria for teacher retention is just a value added.
No, the criteria for teacher retention is job satisfaction, is proficiency, is the ability to get along with teams, is to be respectful and have core values towards children and language of learning, and to provide students with a learning environment that is conducive to moving every single student forward. That's the criteria for employment.
Okay, well then maybe you can explain, what's the criteria for value added?
Explain value added for me.
No, it's your term.
Well, I'm going into this blindly because you've taken out of context.
Well, in what was presented, I'm not in the place, but there is a place in here for teacher compensation that if they have a value added, they get a bonus. And if you don't have a value added, you're on probation for the following year. I'm just wondering, what is value added and how do you compute value added to the school?
I'll find that out for you because I did not develop that PowerPoint. And even when it was presented early on, again, back in October, it was a very rough draft. And so some of those concepts and some of the things, I'm not even completely aware of when it looks at value added. But that's something I can easily ask them. I'm sure it has a very basic meaning that...
Let me just clarify. Is your question towards the current plan in existence for bonus programs, or are you talking strictly towards the E2 get value added?
I understand where she's
No, I asked you a question.
I'm just answering your question. And I understand what she says about the E1, and in the E2, there was...
Okay, so your question is directly towards
E2. Much more direct.
A teacher doesn't have a value added,
will go on probation, and I'm assuming the following year, if they don't have a value added, they're terminated.
Well, all I can tell you is this. The model I currently use to evaluate my teachers now will be the same exact model that I use to evaluate the teachers when we bring in some of the new design elements. That is not an area that is going to be changing.
What's that?
I don't have any more questions.
Okay.
And if you do, Mr. Fuller, again, you know, you can stop by or email me.
Kim.
First, I want to acknowledge the success you've experienced here in the district.
Thank you.
And I think that's why there's some concerns about any changes. What I heard you say at first is that you're not asking to expand now. Did I mishear you?
No, I'm actually informing the board about some of the expansion thing, of the elements that will be taking place in the 2007-2008 school year. This would be next fall that we would be rolling out some of the changes.
And since we were presented as background information, the other component, it would be really nice to know exactly what was going to be implemented in the fall. Because you're saying some of these things you aren't going to implement, like the prefix.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm not sure exactly what you're going to be implementing and what you've decided not to. It also talked about 1.5 hours per day, and you said that isn't going to happen, that it's going to be the 45 minutes to 1 hour only. And it looked like when you read it that it was – at least when I looked at it, I was assuming that there wasn't going to be a 30-to-1 ratio, which you had
right.
claimed. So it would be really nice to have a clear cut what you expect sure. to see in September.
If I can clarify that remark, too, Edison is currently designing the E2 model, as you want to say, that's going to be launched off the E1. And it will be implemented in all Edison schools across the nation, startup, some conversion. The discrepancy that you're seeing and what you may see here is that they may be coming out with a specific design model that they may be rolling out into some of the Edison schools across the nation that are going to be new, or startup as we call. For their conversion, which we are already in existence, it may differ because of the nature of what we currently have and what is successful and the design elements that are there. So your request to say, okay, this was my first attempt tonight to sort of lay out what are going to be some of the big things that you will be seeing rolling out. And I tried, that's why I took off perfect and didn't have it here. That's why I tried to allude to some of the specifics as much as I could of what I know we plan and we're working on as we roll out. The next step would be not only to continue answering your ongoing questions, but as new elements are then solidified and as we know more, like about our scheduling. I happen to mention it may be a 7.5 hour day, 7:30 to 3:15. Well, what would that look like? That will be something I could obviously offer to the superintendent and have come through the backup, just to keep you abreast of what is going on as we move through this. And I've made that commitment to your superintendent to do just that and get this information. This was just a first attempt to look at the global picture of what we're looking at in the changes being made. And then the specifics will definitely roll out to keep you informed. I mean, my goal is to keep you informed. I have no reason whatsoever not to be as transparent as possible. I run, and we have, a very successful school. And it's what's sort of strange is sometimes I feel like I have to defend our success. And, and I want to be and have and maintain an extremely positive relationship with this Board of Education. I have never wanted anything different. And George, you've known me for 16 years. Your kids were at my school. You know the type of principal I am, and you know how I have always valued and respected this Board of Education. It's no different because we're Edison. We appreciate, we honor, we are respect the relationship that exists between this board and Edison in New York. It has been a phenomenal relationship. You've produced and you have in your hands one of the best Edison schools across the nation. And that, it, I mean, how can that happen when you don't have supportive boards? And Edison is very, very appreciative of that. So,
And I don't want to say it's an obstacle, but if you keep talking about facilities, it hasn't been decided where Edison, if Edison's going to go back, where it's going to be, and you're planning on making these changes for the fall when we're not sure, you know, I think for another year you'll probably be where you're at, but how will that affect what you're trying to put into place when you're not sure where you're going to be located?
The only obstacle that I see would be a wall that is not a bearing wall. Between two of my computer labs is a hollow wall, and it could possibly be removed, but if Edison is willing to pay to have it removed, Edison would pay to put it back up. Other than that, we have a full-functioning lab in the Junior Academy. We have a facility that was an old cafeteria that has the new tile, and that can be easily used as a learning lab, and those are just the three areas. So really the only obstacle is a wall that exists between the two labs right now.
And so no matter where the location is, you're saying that Edison will make it work and they will pay to make it work.
Well, obviously, if we had to go back, there are a lot of issues not only for Edison but for the Board of Education with facilities. So I'm sure that would be a dialogue that how would we transfer that program back over to another site. I'm sure that would have to be a discussion that would have to be held.
Okay. I mean, so... Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to figure out exactly where we're going. How many hours are you in school? Are the students
seven
in school
currently.
Now?
7:45
and so
to 2:45.
And so you would increase it by a half hour, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably not even going to be a point. For sure you're not going to be having the students take on responsibilities like housekeeping then and maybe preparing the meals or assisting with the meals.
Well, we is thought about mowing the lawn, but, you know, I thought that might raise some red flags. But
I'm kidding. It outlined what they're going to do, and I was just wondering how that would work with the California School Employees Association and what they're currently doing for you.
Yeah, I don't see that being a factor. I mean, I can remember being in sixth grade, and I actually helped out in the cafeteria. I got my lunch free. I helped out in the cafeteria. You know, as students, there are
no,
a lot
I'm not
of things.
Saying
sure.
It's wrong. I just didn't know to
but
what
But there
extent
are no plans right now to say, for example, we're going to have kids work in the cafeteria, and I'm going to come back to you saying, oh, by the way, we just need our cafeteria manager, and we don't need anyone else because we have students. No, that is not in the plan.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Just clarifying.
That's good. I'd rather have it clarified than assumed, and I've then, you know.
That question. Okay. There's only one more question that hasn't been asked, and if this was implemented, it looks like you're asking for 3 years before the program is judged, and that's it. It says the contract review. It doesn't say anything about benchmarks you would have to meet during those 3 years so we could see that you're on track. Mm-hmm. All it says is that you're asking for a minimum of 3 years before there's any judgment of the program. Can you tell me?
I think that would refer to possibly a new contract coming in with a new district, maybe a new partnership, where if Edison, for example, wanted to partnership with Covina and open up a school and implement an E2, brand-new school, they would ask, just like they currently ask now, for a certain amount of time for the program to get up and running. They currently ask for 2 years with the Alliance schools. Because we're a conversion school, to be honest, we really don't want any downtime. We want to be able to – we see these changes and expansions as actually enhancing what we deliver, and we want to sort of take advantage of it and reap the, you know, the benefits of what's there. And we're hoping to continue our upswing with the test scores.
We really don't want a learning curve. We're going to work extremely hard to have no learning curve at this school.
I'm very happy to hear that because that was a concern.
Yeah, that's most likely a new contract.
Okay. Those are all the questions I had.
Jessica.
Okay, I just wanted to basically summarize. I agree with Cammie, well, Ms. Wallace, that this is a bit premature since your site has not been determined. I know that you believe you'll only be taking down non-load-bearing walls, but it sounds like there will be deeper changes.
In what way? Can you sort of outline those for me? Because I'm
classes,
not sure.
I'm just not sure how it will work, your size. I have too many questions based on the fact that we're being told one thing, and about half of the things that have been brought up, you've said, oh, no, we're not doing that now. So I personally would like to see what exactly will be done. You said in your presentation that some of the design elements aren't finalized. You're asking us to say, oh, great, you're implementing a program that hasn't been finalized 6 months before the start of the year.
Well,
and you're also upgraded benchmark system scheduled for 2008 when you're starting the new program in 2007. And this PowerPoint program, you mentioned that you believe it's for new districts, for new contracts, but it says, given the evolving nature of the program, we would like to add language that notes that we are partners in this R&D endeavor, and we expect that the program implements will continue to be refined in support of enriching the quality of instruction at Edison. So they believe, Edison believes that there's contract changes.
No, actually, no, that's not what that language says. That language says is given the nature of Edison's ability to continuously look at research and development, that throughout the contract there will be design changes.
Okay. Our current contract says the charter school uses curriculum programs that have proven results with youngsters of diverse backgrounds. You stated that you would be using research-based new programs. Where are the results on youngsters of diverse backgrounds? To me, that's a contract change. And so I would actually like, based on changes to the facilities, changes to the curriculum, changes to compensation for teachers, you stated that you will probably get 15 to 25% more than our current principals in the other schools. I believe that's significant and does not stay with the contract where it says it will be similar. And so I would actually like a legal opinion on this matter before we actually even go further from our district attorneys, because I do believe that there are substantial changes, and I would like to either have that confirmed with our district council or not. And I would also like to ask them if they can make changes while we're waiting for our district's council's opinion.
I see significant changes. I agree with Mrs. Polis. I have been proud of the work that Edison has done. They've carried out, they've become an exemplary school. The community has accepted them, and they've had prestigious results. The management has been good. The part relationship with Edison has been good, and we've had a good relationship. However, we have in that it sticks in the back of my mind. We contracted for that service in specific parameters, and I can remember the initial parameters that were brought up and the initial schools that were brought in. And now we're moving into significant change from what I see, and maybe I tend to agree. If we're coming down to, we sounds like we have a legal dispute. We contracted for a specific Edison design, not an evolving design, but a specific Edison design, to which if there was any changes, there's a provision in the contract to renegotiate it. And I see this as a renegotiation situation, that if Edison is going to make these changes and we are going to allow this as the community representatives. We need to negotiate what the changes are and what's going to take place. There's just a lot of confusion I hear. We don't know what the IAL is going to be yet. We don't know how the fourth and fifth grade is going to be quite yet. We don't know what facilities need to be done. These issues need to be resolved, what value added is, need to be resolved, spelled out in a new contract if it's acceptable, and then be approved. Because we're now saying to the community, okay, we've got something, but it's not broke, but we're going to change it. We're going to change it. And I'm not
Mr.
quite
Fuller,
sure why.
I just had a comment about not broke.
Just a minute.
Okay.
You finished?
No, I'm done.
You started this by saying, or something at the beginning of this indication, you indicated that something to the effect that San Jose Edison is the best performing school in the nation. Is that?
Of Edison schools.
Of Edison
schools. Top performing Edison school.
And in this district, you are?
Top performing school.
Top performing school in this district. You know, why would you want to change?
Because we still currently
What's it saying? If it's not if it's not broken, why fix it?
Because there are parts of what we do that are broken. We still have 30% of our population that are not proficient. We may be the top performing school in the nation and in this district, but we still have kids who don't have options. And we have kids that we are continually trying to reach day in and day out. And what I have outlined tonight are not a series of substantial changes. I've easily laid out some very specific points that are expansions of what we're already doing. There's one significant change, and that's the independent learning. And that's mostly what we have seen. Everything else that has been discussed tonight is already taking place in some form at our school. But because we are a school of continuous improvement, we are wanting to take a look at what other things exist out there that we think we can move that 30% that's not proficient to 20%, to 10%, and then finally every single kid on our campus is proficient. That's what we are. This change is about continuous improvement that is intentional and it is purposeful. This is not about politics. This is not about who likes Edison or may not. This is about what we have the ability to do for the children that we serve, that you serve, that are part of our community. And if we have another resource and another way to bring in something that could be better for kids, that's what we're about.
Could you
that's
explain
why I'm
to
here.
Me then, how is it that a charter school differs from the ordinary program that we have in public education with respect to our oversight of charter school versus the public school?
The autonomy. It wrapped up in one word, it's autonomy. Charter schools exist so they can think outside the box, so they can look at ways of meeting the needs of all children. And it doesn't mean frivolously. It means with accountability. And we have done so for 9 years with thinking outside the box in how we service our children. And it has changed significantly from the days that you attended those client conferences. That has been the spirit of how this agreement, this management agreement, has existed between this Board of Education and Edison. And every time we saw that we needed to do something different to meet the needs of our children, it was implemented. And that has been the nature. And that's sort of I came here tonight under that same.
Earlier this evening, we heard about Orangewood School, how they had modified their approach to success for all.
Mm-hmm.
And took a significant part of their school site money to buy supplies and that sort of thing. To me, that's a significant. It's not a major modification because Success for All, it's been proven successful through
Johns Hopkins University.
And we have other
Yeah, our schools, our sites, and that. But they've made some modifications. Is that much different than what you're proposing for Edison?
No, I mean, the independent learning, but, you know, you look at the Waterford and you look at different types of things that other schools may come in and purchase. I know when I was at West Cove, we, you know, when we wanted to make certain changes, certain curriculum, or if we looked at what we had by computer software or how we were going to do the computer, the grant was approved by the board, but what we were doing and how we were doing it wasn't necessarily an approval. It was a site-based decision.
So it's not uncommon in education in general to change paradigms when the needs of the students are at utmost importance, to change to standards, to change to other modifications. Is that?
Oh, tutoring programs are a perfect example. Parent participation activities, they all vary and they change throughout the year according to the needs of the students.
I asked you to come this evening to give us an update on this, and I know that it wasn't, there are a lot of generalizations, there's a lot of confusion between what, you know, was originally presented to us to what's changed over that period of time. Is tonight's proposal, are you talking to us, was your, it wasn't my intent, but I know it was brought up in various questionings, with respect to specifics as to modifications of the contract. Have you proposed that yet, or do you plan to propose specific changes in a contract at some point in time?
That would probably come with the management agreement as we look at renewal. Uh-huh. And that was how this district does business with Edison, is wrapped up in the management agreement and the renewal.
Right.
No, it wasn't part of this, because this was just updating the board about the design implementation, the changes that would be made. It was actually a courtesy. It wasn't structured on like a permission thing. It was just a courtesy to want to make sure this board is informed about the types of things happening at the charter school.
But in all fairness to Jessica, too, that, I mean, and her questions were extremely valid and very, very good,
sure.
Very, very thorough. But it's important. She wasn't here 9 years ago when we went through all of this process.
Yes, and I was sitting in.
Well, I'm sorry, not, sorry, I clarified this. I sat sitting on this side of the board and necessarily getting and hearing all of the discussions that we'd had. But the Edison program, in its processes and when we negotiated this contract, dealt with, like you said, the management issues. Now, we did get into some of the specifics about what it was, because we were very interested at the time in providing research-based material that it was tested, proven successful, and research-based, and San Jose Edison in specific varied from any of those?
Absolutely they've evolved. Mm-hmm. Because to have remained stagnant with what was identified and learned about, to have remained stagnant and not to have changed that design over the course of 9 years would have been educational malpractice. It would have meant that we were not changing in how we were addressing the needs of those children and the type of strategies used. So absolutely those have changed. And that was my point this evening, that there has been an evolution. It has been a process based upon research and development of how we have continually evolved as a school. Now, the overall structure that Mr. Fuller is referring to remains the same and will be remaining the same. The house structure, the core values, the learning environment, all of the professional development, the pillars of the Edison design, there's no transformational change leading into something brand new that this is E2 concept. Those remain constant. How we operate within those parameters in meeting the needs of our children is what has evolved and continues to evolve. And what I presented tonight is a continuance of the evolution of our design in helping us meet student needs, not throwing the baby out with the bathwater here.
My only, Ms. Shoemaker raised the question. I would like to raise it too, and also see if there's a consensus to obtain legal advice, and if it's shown that there is a change in design or a change for negotiation, that Edison be notified that there is a need for negotiation before any changes take place. Ms. Shoemaker and myself are there. I don't know where Mrs. Polis is or Mr. Cox.
Can I
go ahead.
And really quickly, I want to make very clear that we're not attacking Edison's design and results. We are just saying that you are now reaching a step where you're asking to turn a research-based school, which is what the district contracted with Edison to have, into a testing site. We are not saying we're necessarily against the program changes. I am just simply asking for our attorneys to tell us whether or not they believe that the types of changes being made from a research-based program with proven results on youngsters of diverse backgrounds to the E2, if that needs a contract change. The other thing is, I mean, you said that Edison would pay for taking walls down, putting walls up if we decide that's not your permanent site. Well, in our management agreement, it says that the district is responsible for approving any modifications or alterations to the school site. And we are also responsible for the cost of doing so. So if nothing else, we would need a change to our management agreement.
Which there have been addendums.
We have memorandums
of understanding that exist already.
And so we need the first question answered on, is the changes you're making significant enough to impact the contract? And two, then we need to look at an addendum to the management agreement.
I guess the question that I would have from Edison's perspective is, you wish to enter into a legal to survey the landscape and determine if you have the right for negotiations. And my question would be, what is it that you as a board are seeking in wanting to enter in some type of negotiations with how Edison does its job? And I'm just curious.
Because we have a contractual right to say, we have a research-based school, you want to be a testing school. We have a right to say, look, you're our highest performing school. At this time, we don't know that we want to overturn the apple cart or try something new that hasn't been proven in a school that is performing.
But if I still have 30% of my children not performing.
And that begs the question, is Edison effective?
Well, we know Edison is effective.
30%.
We know absolutely Edison is effective.
It still comes down to the question, I still like a consensus, is whether we have, the board should seek legal counsel, and if our legal counsel says it's open to negotiation, that we notify Edison before any changes goes on, and I'm still waiting to see.
First of all, before we put the cart before the horse, this was just, first blush. Let us know kind of what's going on. It's not implemented for some time. If I gave you another month to come back and give us some clarification, I think, quite honestly, you've done a very good job on precisely what's going to be implemented at our site, not a generic national scheme of things, and if you could give us something more precise on what it is that you've done, and look at some of these questions that were addressed this evening with respect to this generic national program versus what you specifically have planned for our site. And I believe you've done that, but let's sit back and take a look and see what that is.
Yeah, that.
Then, as we approach, of course, as we approach the contract renewal time and those other kinds of issues, we'll look not only to what our specific contract addresses, but also what state law or federal law deals with respect to the dealing in with the charter school laws, and we'll move and we'll get the appropriate legal action at that time. There's no question about that.
Whether we
bring in legal opinion or legal for something that really isn't anything that we're looking at as a specific concrete proposal, then it would be reacting to something that.
Well, actually, we're on a timeline. I'll be quite honest. If we're a beta See, and these aren't the significant changes. Yes, the wall could be, and that's at the discretion of the...
Tell me the timeline. Are we understanding?
Well, they've identified us for a reason this early, because there is a lot of work and organization and planning as we look at our sites on what are what's going to be needed. And as they tailor these types of things, because they are taking this very seriously. This is not you're selected and you're implementing this in 3 weeks. They're giving this 10 months of identifying these, working on the scheduling, working on how is
so
it independent
the timeline
learning.
Is 10 months or is the timeline well, 1 week?
No, the timeline, they've identified the schools. Now, in working with those individual schools, they want to see what needs to be done, what work needs to be done to implement the types of changes I've laid out tonight.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask Mrs.
Just a minute,
Polis,
George. Just a minute, George.
On this list?
No, just a minute. Just as a clarification, you know, there's some modifications that were done at San Jose Edison. Could you just briefly give... briefly on some of those, I know the lunch area, the lunch shelter.
The old San Jose Edison? Significant modifications. The entire complete renovation of the 10,000 square foot building into 8 classrooms and a learning lab. The $85,000 lunch shelter. The entire asphalting of the junior academy area. A retaining wall. Brand new drainage that was put up. Trees that were planted. Ball walls, painting, those were all significant renovations, and many of those did not come. I mean, the ball walls, those were done. We put up the ball walls. It was an improvement to the site. The retaining wall, when we worked with business services, it was an unbelievable amount of cost and loss of carpet when we had flooding coming into the portables that were put in, and we then put in a drainage system as well as a retaining wall at our expense to remedy the situation. And that did not come forward.
Right, thank you. Did you address the issue on
The legal counsel?
Yeah.
Well, what I had asked before is I would like to see actually in writing what exactly you want to do before we decide on legal counsel, because you've been clear telling us what you want, but in writing I'm seeing different things.
Sure.
So I would like to see what it's going to look like at your site and then determine if it's significant.
Right.
Sure. So what I think the understanding should be, the original proposal that was just put out as an Edison company generic draft is not in our best interest because it doesn't specifically represent what it is we're trying to do as we know it now.
And they plugged your name in several places. I mean, you read your name, Denise, in there. They don't say Dr. Patton, but it says Denise.
That's fine. I prefer Denise.
Yeah. And then it says, it refers to San Jose Edison specifically in this document. So it looked like, and so they may have just plugged those in, you know, into a generic document, but it looked like they were saying this is what was going to happen at that site because it wasn't a generic proposal.
Sure.
Your name was plugged in.
And they will do that as a marketing. I think it's a marketing, and it's fine for the time to do a preliminary look, this is what could be. But you're right. When you get down to the specifics of what it's going to look like at your school in your district, you would like it to be much more specific to us. And that's very doable.
And you're aware that if you come back 2 months from now with a multi-page document with all your specifics and everything laid out, that we may still request the legal opinion and still require you to renegotiate. So do you want to go ahead and take that opportunity and say, there's two on the board right now that request a legal opinion. I would request a legal opinion just because there's a lot of confusion out here as to the decision of what needs to go forward. If you go ahead and put that together, you're aware there's no guarantee that you're going to come back and say, okay, it's implemented. There's still the legal question, and you may put 2 months of work in here and put everything into it and then find that you can't go ahead and even begin negotiations because school's coming to the end. Would you rather take that opportunity or get a legal opinion now where the district is and then begin negotiations to see this come about, if it can come about? Or do you want to do all the work put 2 months worth of work into here, have it come back, and now have a legal opinion come back and say, you know what, this is a significant change, you should be negotiating it, right, Edison, and now it'll be June, and you're trying to negotiate your opening of your school. Which would you prefer, to get a legal opinion now from us and to try to settle it and from yours, or to go that route?
Jessica.
Really quickly, do you think you'll need 2 months, or can you have the exact proposal ready by our next meeting?
Yeah, I would not wait 2 months,
just
right?
Because you've stated that you've already started making the changes. I have now stated that I believe you are making changes that require renegotiation of the contract. So I...
What I actually stated...
No, you'll just wait for me, and then
and
we'll go on.
Well, I meant...
Just a minute.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, how long do you think you'll need to... I would not want any changes to continue to occur, if they are occurring at this point, to change the site to beta testing. And three, I mean, I guess going forward with an attorney's opinion based on what will actually happen could then happen after the next meeting, if it's necessary.
Mrs. Patton, if it's all right, Dr. Patton, if it's all right with you, I will speak with the superintendent. I've got a gist of what it is that we want to move, how this side of the board wants to move forward with that, and we will do that, and I will talk with you specifically, or have her talk to you about the logistics and the timing of moving forward with this program.
No, so I don't want you speaking with the superintendent. This is something that should be an open session item on how it's moving, because this may involve attorneys. It's something that all five of us have to vote on. So if setting up timetables and what should be in the report and everything else is something that needs to happen at the table.
And it will happen as we put together
the one of the I need a clarification.
I'm sorry, Mr. Cox. Are you saying you're going to go ahead and allow them to implement it and then
if not implemented,
give us feedback?
Yeah. When you refer to, I said that we've already implemented.
I didn't hear Mr. Cox. I'm getting a clarification from him. Are you going to meet with the superintendent? You're going to work out with Dr. Patton how this is going to progress and then give us a feedback of what's progressing? Or are you going to give us an opportunity to come back and make the decision whether we have a contract? Because I think from our standpoint as a board, we have to decide whether we have a contract dispute. I'm sorry. Legal things, somebody once said, legal things are ugly. And so we pay attorneys big money to handle ugly things.
Let me understand.
We have to resolve this.
Do you believe, Mr. Fuller, that today that the San Jose Edison Company is in violation of their management contract?
I'm saying...
Answer the question, yes or no.
I would have to go over there and audit it. Annual audit? An annual audit coming. When was the last annual audit we got?
Do you believe that the Edison Company is in violation of our contract, existing contract, the way that they're performing today based on the information that she's presented?
From the information she's presented, I think there's a lot of confusion, and I would like to see the audit report that's supposed to be handled annually in the contract.
I will meet with the superintendent. We have an understanding of the issues that have been discussed tonight, and we will move forward on this. You will be updated in your weekly updates, and we will bring forward additional information as the board has requested.
There. So does that mean that we're going to have a legal opinion, or?
No.
Well, then, what information? We should be deciding here. What are you going to say? Do you say, this is done, I've decided as president, and this is done? This is what you have over at Edison? Or
this is over. We have a board meeting to go on to. All right.
It's not resolved. Well, let's bring it back next week and then see what we have.
We will bring it back to the next meeting. I will talk with the superintendent and we will get additional information. Mrs. Patton.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure.
You going to need a break or you want to? You all right, Kim?
I'm fine, thank you.
Next item on the agenda is item number 5. Mike Spence asked that if he's brought off the agenda, since he can't be here, didn't want to, wanted it known that he was not going to vote to approve it and let it at that. So can I have a motion, or is there any other further discussion on this item?
I move it.
I'll second it.
So I moved by George Fuller, seconded by Kim Nicholas, to approve the consultant agreement with the Rogers Group, Drs. Belinda Karge, Barbara Glaser, Susan Flores, Rosario,
Ordonez Hassis. Further to approve budget transfers, purchase orders, and warrants in support of the agreements. Are there any objections? Hearing none, the motion is passed 4-0. Mr. Fuller asked the item number 7 to be pulled.
Yes, and at the bottom of page 73, if I was glad to see it, but I had an explanation at the bottom last paragraph. The bottom last sentence on page 73, the district is moving toward a response to intervention program model. And can you explain where we are on that and how far we've implemented it and where we're going? So we're in the process. Okay.
So you're saying it is a requirement of this plan for us to have an intervention plan, and you are attempting to figure out what that plan is. So in this plan, we're saying we will have one, and you'll come back to the board and explain what that is.
Okay. And one last thing, just a side note, but on page 87, it was nice to see that number 10, we will comply with the Armed Forces Recruiting Access Provisions. I know that's a controversial topic in some places. So, with that, I will move it.
Any objections? Motion to order. Item number 9, contract with Walla Valley Unified School District for Special Education. What? Tammy did.
Item number 9, I asked for this to be pulled off. I have a concern. I think we're just going. Let me phrase this. I appreciate staff's efforts to save us money. I appreciate what they're trying to do. I don't get as upset if we have to keep somebody in and pay him health insurance benefits along with it, which I see this as. And I see this in a particular one. I think we would be benefiting the student more. We have a student who is visually impaired, blind, who needs an aide, and an aide needs students build relationship with aides, and they go through. We are now asking to save money that we split the aide into 2-3 hour aides, which always presents problems. You know, one aide calls off sick, and then now he's left without one, and he's having a bad day in the morning, and the aide just gets it straight, and then he has to go through it with another one and things. I would just like to see us do one aide for 6 hours and then whatever the extra expense is to accomplish that, which I'm assuming is the health care benefits. I'm assuming. Right. He's away from home. Yes, I appreciate trying to save money. In this case, I'd like to give the benefit to the student.
From personal experience, it's sometimes better to have two different individuals because the child becomes too independent on a one-on-one aide. And when there's two different people, it's not as likely that would happen. If it's now, because the child's blind, there might be unique needs and unique training. They may be difficult to get two people to do. But if it was in the best, and it looked like the team decided on this, and did they have people in mind to do that? So there's a good chance they had two trained aides to do that, and there might have, since the team agreed, now, in my opinion, it would be okay unless it was being appealed. And it doesn't sound like that decision's being appealed.
The district wanted one, right?
Walnut Valley.
It sounds like the team requested one, and we went back and negotiated two.
But it was agreed to, though.
Yeah.
It would have to be. Right.
Well, I'll make the motion that we, as stated here, except we will have one aide for 6 hours.
So you're making a motion to modify the contract that's been negotiated?
Right, one aide for 6 hours.
Gales for a second. Is there a motion?
I'll move the motion as stated.
Moved by Tammy Polis, second by Jessica Shoemaker. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Two ayes is better than none.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your vote.
It's an aye. Two ayes are better than none.
So your vote is aye?
Aye.
So the vote is 4-0. Item 19 is put on consent. Item 20, public disclosure of collective bargaining agreements. Any discussion?
I'd like to call on Mr. Frutos just to give you an intro and then you can vote. He needs to have a roll call vote on this one, so he has to pass the information to you.
I'm passing a letter that yesterday. It basically is what we were looking for. As you know, after negotiated agreements, we have an obligation after Assembly Bill 1200 passed to get approval from the Department of Education, which represents the state, regarding the financial agreements that we make when we negotiate. The culmination of that negotiation with the county is a letter accepting our AB 1200 report, which you have in your board packet, in regards to the cost and the stability of the district for the subsequent 3 years. In the report, what you have seen are the costs for each of the three groups that we are negotiating with. Since the negotiations came about at the same time, we were able to include both all groups in the Assembly Bill 1200 report, and also to differentiate to the county office that the final settlement will allow us to remain stable for the current year and the two subsequent years, which is the mandate of AB 1200. We are one of the first districts that has all closure, and the letter is the end of the agreement.
Okay, roll call, Mr. President. Can you ask for a roll call vote?
Well, I guess we shouldn't let this pass without acknowledgement to the both the California School Association, School Employee Association, and the Teachers Association of West Covina for their cooperation in this matter. This has been, for as long as I've been on the board, probably one of the most incredible periods of time that we've had, and it's been extraordinary both to staff and to the both associations. Monica, will you take a roll call for us, please? Do I need a motion to approve this?
Moves.
I'll second it.
It's been moved by George Fuller, seconded by Tammy Polis. You take a roll call, please.
Mr. Cox?
He's last. He's last.
Aye.
I'm going by the way. That's a Ms. Shoemaker?
Aye.
Mr. Fuller?
Aye.
Mrs. Polis?
Aye.
Motion passes 4-0. Oh, finally! Awesome!
Ready?
Yes. We are ready.
Okay.
This is
our
opportunity to review the 2005-2006 audited financial statements from the certified public accounting firm of Nigro, Nigro, and White.
And in the interest of time, Mr. Frutos
has
provided you the entire audit report for you to read at your leisure or bedside table.
Oh, no, I think we're
taking
that.
And he will give you
a shortened version. Wait. We've all done. Jessica, as a matter of fact, I'm sure has got at least two pages of printed questions on this.
This doesn't affect the call.
Oh! Jessica.
So, Mr. Frutos.
Last year we had several findings that I explained to you, and you received the we received the audit a little bit early. I want to point to you an item that we included. It's in your third page. It's just two pages long, because this year we only had one finding, and I would like to very briefly explain to you what it is. If you go to the third page, you can pull out two pieces of paper. And those two pieces of paper look like this. They're just open your audit, and we inject it in there. Steve, you're looking at it right there. It looks like this. When we first started the auditor came to us and said, you have a variety of irregularities in your attendance systems. And in working with our pupil services department, some of our schools, including Coronado, we went from a finding of 26.98 students, which would have meant that we would be coming to you with a penalty of $160,000. After working with our auditor with the schools, we have a finding of 0.24. So it went from almost 27 to 0.24, which will mean a potential finding of $1,400 that will be probably turning to zero. So I'm very happy to bring you an audit that has been approved by the county, that has no material findings, and that's the end of the report. There's balances, and we're good. Mm-hmm.
Could I have a tape of Mr. Crutos?
Absolutely.
I'm sorted out.
Yes.
But it sounds good.
That's all that needs to be said. We are very fortunate to be in great standing in terms of our budget and our ratings this year, in large part thanks to Mr. Fruto's diligence and this board's approval.
Bob, you want us to go through it step by step? Come on. It's great. Give me some support. Huh?
No, thank you. No, thank you.
You want to know what the balance sheet says, income statement?
I'll put it by the bed and read it.
Yes, thank you very much. Well, you have to understand, our president is an accountant who gets turned on by these kinds of reports. No fun.
All right. Is there a motion to this item, please?
I'll move it.
Moved by Jessica and seconded by Cammie. To receive the audit report from Niagara Niagara and White for 2005-2006 fiscal year. Additional copies are available at your request. Any objections? Motion so ordered. More discussion?
Yeah. I don't know how else to say it, but, you know, I was disturbed. I don't usually watch American Idol, but I know 60 million people do, and I know a lot of kids do. And I was very disturbed with the outtakes of it, and then they had an interview with the people that were doing it. What I heard and what I saw was extremely cruel, just plain cruel. And I want it known that in this district we have policies as to respect the students and to what's going on, and we have an inclusion program. And I just hope they monitor that they're going to continue on. Like, this is the social norm, that it is not the social norm in this district. It's not the social norm in this district. So, enough said.
No complaints about Survivor or anything like that? Anything else?
I just, since number 19 was on consent, I just wanted to thank Steve for the time he put in and the thoughtful questions he put into the retirement plan, and that Mr. Frutos coming back with such great answers. And I know it took a lot of time on both of your parts, and I wanted to say thank you to both of you.
February 12th, the schools in the district will be closed in observance of Lincoln's birthday. And or I guess it's President's Day these days, or whatever.
President's is the next one.
What is it?
It's Lincoln's. They have the next Monday off too. We just have a board meeting before.
Okay. And a board meeting on February 13th. Look forward to seeing you all there. Nice evening. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you. I need extra binding monitor.
Well,
that's fine. Versus having a binding.